Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Mo H., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater from Walnut Creek, California. Today is Monday, May 10th, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are in Chapter 4, We Agnostics. We're on page 55, starting down at the bottom there, the fifth paragraph down. In this book, you will read, and we're reading through four paragraphs, ending on the next page with, who are you to say there is no God? And we're commenting on all four paragraphs. Today's readers are Rhonda R., the 12 Steps, and Terry H. for the 12 Traditions. And the readers of the text will be Barbara W., Kara L., and Betsy H. The share ID for yesterday's Sunday Special Edition, May 9th, is 16,914, that's 16914, and for Monday, May 10th, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, earlier this morning, is 16,917, that's 16917, and newcomer greeter for today is Lorraine N., and our announcements person is Leslie M. The OA Preamble, Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who through shared experience, strength, and hope are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Rhonda R. to read the 12 steps. Good morning, Rhonda.
Good morning, Mo. Thank you so much. These are the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous, and I'm Rhonda R., grateful, recovered, compulsive eater in Georgia. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for the opportunity to be of service.
Well, and thank you, Rhonda R., for reading the 12 steps. Now, I will ask Terry H. to read the 12 traditions. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning, Mo. Thank you for your service. This is Terry H. I'm from Pensacola, Florida, and I'm a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater through God's grace. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Number one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on OA unity. Two, For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscious. Our leaders are but trusted servants, but they do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has the one primary purpose to carry this message to compulsive overeaters who still suffer. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. And 8, O-Readers Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 11, O-Readers Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relation policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for allowing me this opportunity to serve. Have a great day.
And thank you, Terry H., for reading the 12 traditions. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read in the Big Book. We are sharing what the directions in this book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute your phone. And once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone again. And in order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. And that is the star 1 function on your phone, not the mute function. So today we will resume our study of the Big Book, and we are on page 55, the fifth paragraph, the bottom of the page. It starts with, in this book, you will read. And then it goes through 4 paragraphs on the next page, 56, ending with, who are you to say there is no God? And I am going to ask Barbara W. to get us started. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning, Mo, and good morning, fellow visionaries. Okay. Recovered. In this book, you will read the experience of a man who thought he was an atheist. His story is so interesting that some of it should be told now. His change of heart was dramatic, convincing, and moving. Our friend was a minister's son. He attended a school where he became rebellious at what he thought was an overdose of religious education. For years thereafter, he was dogged by trouble and frustration, business failure, insanity, fatal illness, suicide, his calamity, and his immediate family, better than depressed him, post-war disillusion, ever more serious alcoholic, impending mental and physical collapse, brought him to the point of self-destruction. One night, when confined in a hospital, he was approached by an alcoholic who had known a spiritual experience. Ah, Bill W. Our friend scored Rhodes as he bitterly cried out, "Well, if there is a God, he certainly hasn't done anything for me." But later, alone in his room, he asked himself this question: is it possible that all the religious people I have known are wrong? While pondering the answer, he felt as though he lived in hell. Then, like a thunderbolt, a great thought came and crowded out all else. "Who are you to say there is no God?" Wow, those are four very powerful paragraphs. And as I look back in my history of finding the God that I have now, this entity, this divine spirit, is incredibly moving for me in my life. I was raised in a mainline church, and my mom was just adamant. She wasn't really heavily religious. She just said, we need to be at church on Sunday morning. And so I would go to Sunday school, and then she would go to her church. And then, come to think of it, then I remember there used to be, little libations that we could have afterwards. And then we'd go home every Sunday. There was even such a thing as a midnight mass for Christmas Eve. And I don't like to call it that, other than I remember how much I love the ritual of it. But a lot of things happened. Well, for one, my parents divorced twice with each other. I had a second marriage. My marriages didn't work out. Well, I can't speak from honestly remembering how I felt, but I do remember feeling extremely discouraged after all this. I swore I would have a very healthy and marriage with these three children, and we would live happily ever after. Well, didn't work. Well, feeling very discouraged. But it's interesting that I've been in program a very long time. I'm 75 years old, and been program over 40 years. And what I do feel in my heart is that all those times Mom took me to church, she died very, very young. She died when she was only 56, leukemia. But what I remember and my search is I remember those times I had to go on Sunday, but I loved going on Sunday. I was very much like my mother, very, very into that. And what I realized is all my adult life, through all my ups and downs, through both marriages, but having those three wonderful children who are now in their 40s and all that. The one thing that came to me in about 18 months ago was the greatest God of my understanding that I have now, that has taken me through so many circumstances that I pass.
Well, thank you, Barbara W., for getting us started. Let me remind everybody where we're at. We're on page 55, the fifth paragraph down, bottom of the page. In this book, you will read. We're going to read through four paragraphs, ending with, "Who are you to say there is no God?" And I will now take names of those who would like to share.
Danielle W.
Danielle W.
Kathleen O.
Kathleen O. I have Danielle W. and Kathleen O. Anyone else who would like to share?
Hi, it's Patty L. from Massachusetts.
Deborah G.
Patty L. and Deborah G. Got room for some more. Okay. I'll take those four then. Danielle W., Kathleen O., Patty L., and Deborah G. Good morning, Danielle.
Good morning. This is Danielle W., gratefully recovered one day at a time and really happy to be here today. These paragraphs mean a great deal to me. I was raised in a family. My mother is a devout Catholic, and my father is a unwavering atheist. And the deal they struck was that I would be raised Catholic and my sister would be raised atheist. And what I learned very quickly at a very young age is there wasn't really room for questioning or exploration. You know, my spiritual life was predetermined, or so they thought. And that just never sat well with me, that I couldn't question. And even being raised in the Catholic Church and going to Sunday school, there wasn't room for disagreement. So when I came to Al-Anon, OA, I desperately needed to be here. But when people would talk about God, I would just bristle at the idea of it. Until somebody said to me, the God of your understanding. And I started to think about, could all these people be wrong? You know, I'm seeing grace and change in people's lives. And could they be wrong? Could I be wrong? And when my sponsor said, this is the God of your understanding, it meant for the first time that it was time to seek, and it was time to really look at all the prejudice that I was bringing with me, all the thoughts that seemed permanent in and around God and a relationship with God. And I really got to let go of the things that no longer served me and really open my heart and my mind to a whole new experience of a higher power. I didn't think it was possible. I thought I was going to get through this program. I was going to do the steps. I was going to do what I was told, but I could maybe not have to delve too deeply into the God thing. And now I realize that that is the source of everything for me. And I have this amazing relationship with a higher power of my understanding. And it's the most important thing in my life. And we all get to find it on our own, in our own way. And I mean, that is just such an extraordinary gift. And with that, I'll pass.
And thank you very much, Danielle W. Kathleen O, followed by Patty L. Good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning, Mo. This is Kathleen O, recovered compulsive overeater in Northern California. So the experience of a man who thought he was an atheist, and this man, who happens to be Fitz Mayo, flat out didn't believe in God. You know, but truly, what good does a spiritually dead heart do to us? I never thought myself an atheist, but I also didn't think God could help me with my food problem. Food was the answer to all my problems, but unfortunately, it wasn't a very good answer because it brought me nothing but misery and more problems. His change of heart was dramatic, convincing, and moving. So, you know, with desperation and feeling doomed, it isn't too difficult to have a change of heart when it comes to believing in the idea of God. I had to stop struggling and choose my own belief. I knew I couldn't do it on my own accord. And Fitz Mayo was a minister's son, so I can understand how he felt overdosed on religious education. I attended Catholic school and felt an overdose of religious education, so I can totally relate to Fitz Mayo. And, you know, like most addicts, when the going gets tough, we drink or eat or go to whatever brings us ease and comfort, whatever brings us ease and comfort. So, you know, Fitz's family problems were overwhelming, and he drank. And he ended up going to Towns Hospital in New York for treatment and was one of the first few that Bill W. helped. But And in there, you know, if it's had a 180, because if we can believe what we read, it said that when the big book was being written, Fitz wanted Christian doctrines, biblical terms and expressions. And Bill was in the middle, and Hank P., who was AA's number two, wanted very little of God. So the result was a compromise of God as we understood him. So all we have to do is seek God as we understand God. You know, are we human beings having a spiritual experience, or are we spiritual beings having a human experience? Our food problem, it can be taken away with his power. It happened to Bill, it happened to Hank and Fitz and the first 100 men and women who recovered from the seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. So this chapter, We Agnostics, is about the spiritual life beginning in ignorance or not believing, and then being willing to believe. And through the steps, having a spiritual experience where we grow in faith and grow in spiritual power. So, you know, who am I to say there is no God? Because I know I can't do this without that power. I certainly tried most of my life, but I came to believe. So this is a program of honesty and action, and it does work. And with that, I pass. Thanks, Mo.
Well, thank you, Kathleen. Patty L., followed by Deborah G. Good morning, Patty L.
Oh, hi, everyone. Hi, everyone. This is Patty L., calling from Massachusetts. I can totally identify in with this paragraph. I'm a Christian, so I came into this program, you know, really thinking that I had a one up on everybody, and you know, because I did believe in God, and I thought I had a strong faith in God. And when I started to read this chapter, when you guys were on this chapter, I kept thinking, oh, I just don't identify in with this, you know. And as we rode along, I realized that I do. And this particular sentence got to me, like, if there is a God, he certainly hasn't done anything for me. And even though I have, you know, all this supposed faith, when I got really honest about the whole thing, I realized, you know, I had to admit deep down within myself that I really wanted God to perform for me, that my faith was conditional. And I didn't understand why he wasn't taking away this food problem. And I used to, I would shake my fist at God, you know, thinking, you know, why do all these people have this spiritual awakening? And yet, you know, I'm so, you know, I love you so much, and, you know, yet I haven't had it. And so, you know, my love and my faith for God was just conditional upon this one thing. Like, why isn't God doing anything for me? And if he did do things for me, then my faith would be increased. It was like, I could see God in that, you know, but I wouldn't put the food down. And I just have come to realize that, you know, unless I'm willing to participate with God, then, you know, he really can't do much for me. And I love this part, too, when it said, pondering the answer, he felt as though he lived in hell. And that was true about me when you know, I'm in the food. And I love when it said, then like a thunderbolt, which was that, like, wow, that must have been like an extreme spiritual experience, this thunderbolt that came. And then that great thought, that word great, like this was an amazing thought. It crowded out all else. And then he realized, the humility that comes in the next sentence, which are, who do you to say that there is no God? And who am I to say that this isn't possible when it happened to all these people? And all you know, people on this line are witness to the fact that this miracle does happen. It is real. So anyway, just wanted to share that. Thank you. Thank you for listening.
Well, thank you, Patty L. And before I take Deborah G., let me remind everybody where we're at. We're in Chapter 4, We Agnostics, on page 55, down at the bottom of the page, the fifth paragraph. In this book, you will read, and we're going to read through four paragraphs. We're going to be studying the four paragraphs, ending with, who are you to say there is no God? And after Deborah G., if you haven't shared in the last 3 days, I will take your name. Good morning, Deborah.
Oh, good morning, Mo. Thank you so much.
Hey, Al.
Wait, we're just going to have another share, and then I'll take names, okay? All right. Go ahead, Deborah.
Okay. And thank all those that have made this meeting possible and all those that have shared already in 12-Step Me and you know, I grew up, was told there was a God, had no connection at all. It was just something out there. And, you know, and I was in the throes of the food. I was in the throes of other addictions, and I could not make that connection. So I was, you know, somewhat walking around like an atheist because I had no connection or thought or for a faith or anything. And it wasn't until recovery did I truly, truly find that, like others have said, that power that was love and everything and beauty and knowledge and just so many things that I never thought possible because of my message that I got about that God earlier. You know, it's like that belief. I had to let go of that old belief and actually feel in my heart and in my soul that experience of that presence so that I could totally surrender, get honest with myself that I can't do this and totally surrender to that presence, to that loving presence. You know, not only just my food or other addictions, but my life, you know. And that doesn't mean I don't forget, you know, or get disconnected. It's nothing like it used to be, nothing, because of my experience that I have with it. You know, I've actually felt it and seen it. And it's just wonderful. And the power that it has. That was one I just missed, the power. How much happens in transformation with me because of that power? Oh, just the fact I'm not doing the food. I'm no longer suffering. You know, I can do suffering in my head, which is something that I have to ask that power to remove because I can't do it. I can't do those kinds of things. Now, I do have a brain. Common sense, do have a heart, and I do have intuition, but I do believe that that power, that presence, that loving presence is part of all that. And I'm so grateful to be able to have this experience. Thank you all.
Well, and thank you, Deborah G. So now, if you haven't shared in the last 3 days, so that's starting last week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you can share today. And I will take more names who'd like to share on these four paragraphs.
Lydia T.
Lydia
T.
K.L.
Liz S. Liz S. Lydia T. K. K.
Katie.
Was that K?
Katie. K. K.L.
Oh, K. Kate L. Okay, gotcha.
K. K.A.Y.E.L.
Oh, K.A.Y.E.L. And then Katie V, okay.
Jordan L.
Who was that?
Jordan L.
Oh, Jordan. Hi, Jordan.
Hey, Mo.
Hey. Okay, let's go with that group. We have Lydia T, Liz S, K L, Katie V, and Jordan L. Okay, I think I got that right. Good morning, Lydia T. You're up first.
Hi, this is Lydia T., a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Marquette, Michigan today. And I just really loved the paragraphs that we're studying today and all the history that goes along with it. But for me, on a personal note, you know, I don't know that I would say I was an atheist, but I certainly believe that God really wasn't concerned with my food when there's so much bigger things in the world, or even any of my other addictions or my family problems or anything. I thought, you know, he's got a lot bigger things to work on, or she, whomever the spirit of the universe is, universal spirit. And when I finally was able to surrender and say, you know, I don't know everything. I don't know what's in store for me. The way I've been living my life isn't working. And got on my knees and like, really, who am I to say that there is no God, that God isn't going to take care of me, my family, all of my perceived problems, But the minute I'm able to surrender and work the steps as they're laid out in the book, everything seems easier. And I feel that connection to my higher power. And, you know, I've been through, you know, lots of stuff in my life. And my youngest son right now had, you know, mental health issues, addiction issues, ended up in a hospital with some medical issues and is now in rehab. And none of that was my doing. I didn't make him become an addict. I didn't make him have any of these problems, and I didn't make him go to rehab. And the more I surrender every day, the more happy I can be when I talk to him and just be happy that he's alive today. And God has a plan for him. I may have given birth. I may have been witness to his life the first 15 years, but he's got his own journey, just like I had my own journey. And my journey, you know, I didn't get recovered until I was 50 years old. And you know what? That's okay. It was my journey. And I was finally able to say, you know, who am I to say there isn't a God, there isn't a higher power? And the more I say that and the more I surrender, all I can say is the better life gets. And I want to thank everybody on this meeting for their service. Thank you, Mo. Thank you, everybody. And thanks, everybody, for their shares. I'll pass.
Well, thank you, Lydia T. Liz S., followed by K.L.
Hi, Liz S. from New Hampshire, and I was thinking of the process that I'd been through, and I had just enough of religious school to completely turn me off to the concept of God. And I remember my grandmother used to go to church every single day, and it took me years to understand that she did that because she had an alcoholic husband and five children to raise. And it was a long time before I could have compassion for her. He died of alcoholism, and I think her faith is what saved her life and made her able to raise five children. But I didn't believe, I couldn't understand that as a young child. And there are two things that helped me a great deal. One was a course I took in college would help me to understand or see God as good. And then, of course, I came into program and the concept of God as I understand him. And that made all the difference. Although it took me several years to really infiltrate and really take that in and make that part of my life and my belief. And today it is, it truly is. And when something goes wrong, I can surrender it to that God, not the God I learned or was taught years and years and years ago in school, but the God that I've learned about here in these rooms, which has been one of the greatest gifts I've had, because it relieves me of so much that I can give to him. It's a masculine figure, I call it God, so much pain and fear and worry, and be relieved of it and not have to live with it myself. And it's not a white light experience. It's more what William James refers to as the you know, sort of the gradual spiritual awakening. And I'm so grateful for it, and I'm so grateful for this concept of God as I understand him. And with that, I pass.
And thank you, Liz S. And next we'll have K.L. Is that, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes. That's correct. Can I be heard?
Oh, yes, you may. Yes, you are.
morning, thank you. I was the one who interrupted earlier. Sorry about that. My name is K.L.
No problem.
And I'm new. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that. I'm new to the program. I'm actually doing, finishing up my step one, and I'm a recovering compulsive overeater. And I was raised in a similar fashion, you know, religious overload through school, not necessarily home. I went to Catholic school from the ages of 4 to 16. But what I found out is that having a religion for me is not necessarily having a relationship with a higher power. It's not the same as being able to access that higher power to help us with, you know, issues, especially for me, you know, this. And we are blocked from our higher power by life's calamities, just like the guy in this story. And these blockages are why we're all here. The line, "Who are you to say there is no God?" reminds me that I need to set aside everything I know about not only, you know, food, but of God as well. And I need to be open. And with that, I pass. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing, KL. Next, we have Katie V, followed by Jordan L. And after that, we can take some more names. Good morning, Katie.
Hi, good morning. Oh, thank you so much. Sorry, I was just unmuting. Hi, I'm Katie V, a recovered compulsive overeater from Brooklyn, New York. Today, joining you guys from the West Coast. I love these paragraphs. I love the story of the minister's son because I can so relate, right? I came into this program after losing 200 pounds through anorexia, overexercise, and laxative bulimia. And I thought I was God. You know, I walked around thinking, especially when I came into program, I walked in thinking, I'm the girl who's lost 200 pounds. What are you guys going to tell me about eating? You know, because I thought this whole thing was just about losing weight when I came in, because I had no conception of a power greater than myself. I fully thought as I was losing 200 pounds that God was behind the whole thing. And that if I did good, God made me lose a pound the next day. And if I didn't, I gained six. And that's all my relationship was. It was, I'm good, you make me lose weight, and then go sit in the corner. And when I came into this program and fell on my face, you know, couldn't get abstinent for 2 months and just picking up every 2-3 days and crying and calling my sponsor, you know, trying to do it all on my own because there was all this stuff I wasn't willing to do. And the number one thing was I wasn't willing to surrender to a power greater than myself. It just was totally out of the question because I was my greater power. And after I fell on my face with an epic relapse in another program, I said, okay, maybe I don't know what's best. Maybe I am wrong. And maybe there is something else out there because I saw all of you who had recovered with smiles, with light in your eyes, and I was just dying in the food. So I was as arrogant as the minister's son walking around thinking I knew. And when I apologized to God, I burst into tears. I had this insane moment where, or maybe it was the most sane moment I'd ever had, where I said, God, I'm so sorry for my arrogance. I can't believe I've been doing all this long without you. And I cried. I cried for hours. And God just said to me, it's okay. You're here now. We can always start today. God is always here at the center of everything we do and everywhere we are. And today is the most important fact of my life. Thank you, God, for this program. Thank all of you for being awake. I can't do any of this without you guys. And with that, I'll pass.
And thank you, Katie V. from New York. Before I take Jordan L., let me remind everybody where we are. We're in Chapter 4, We Agnostics, on page 55, the fifth paragraph down at the bottom of the page. In this book, you will read, and we're reading through four paragraphs, commenting on all four, ending with, "Who are you to say there is no God?" And after Jordan, I will take some more names. Good morning, Jordan.
Hey, good morning, Mel. Thank you for moderating for us this morning. My name is Jordan Allen. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Gunnison, Colorado, and I'm very grateful to be on a meeting and abstinent with you all this morning. and thank you for the opening reader. Your voice inflections were awesome. It was very theatrical, and it made me chuckle. It was cool. So thank you for reading these paragraphs for us this morning. I'm like looking at my big book here, and we agnostics, man, I have like marked this chapter up completely and totally. I spent a long time in step one, not as long as some people. I've heard of people that have been in step one for decades, for sure. But myself, I spent 5 years in step one. And it was all about the food, and it was all about finding a food plan and calling in food and weighing and measuring and all that stuff. And I'm not saying that any of that stuff is bad by any means. They're all very helpful tools, some of which I still do today, very much so. but it was all about the food. And that's what step one is, at least the first half of it. Like, it's all about the food. And it just, like, it takes what it takes in order for me to understand that food is but a symptom. That when I come in here, I put down the food. And then after that, it's not about the food anymore. In order to proceed in the steps, like, I really got to move on from that. I mourn the food. For me, I was very sad putting it down because food had really been a good friend to me and had really, like, been there for me and showed up in my life in ways that were important at the time, in ways that enabled me to get through the situations that I had been through up until that point. But when I got to We Agnostics and I got to step two, I had to find a loving higher power. And I was right where the minister's son was, man. If there is a God, he certainly hasn't done anything for me. I was in a position where I was like, fuck you, God. I don't want anything to do with you. Please don't let the language deter you. That was how I felt. I do that for dramatic effects, right? That's where I was at. So I can very much relate to this guy and what he was doing. And so that's perfect, though, because at least when I'm in that position, I start to understand that this is not about the food, that in order to move forward, I have to have a higher power. I got to have a God other than the food, you know? So I'm very grateful to have found that God and to continue to discover that God over and over again each day. With that, I'll pass.
Well, thank you, Jordan L. And if you haven't shared in the last 3 days, we ask that you pass. If you have shared in the last 3 days, we ask that you wait until tomorrow to share. That would be Thursday, Friday, and today. So I have time for about 3 more shares, 2 to 3. Who would like to share?
Kathleen.
Okay, who was first before Renee?
Kathleen G. W.
Carrie G. I got Carrie G. And then I got Renee W. And who was that after Renee?
Kathleen W.
Kathleen W. All right, we'll see if we can get to all of you. Carrie G., you're up first, followed by Renee W.
Thank you, Mo, for your service. This is Carrie G., recovered in Colorado. So grateful to be with you, my fellows. Yes, Monday. And the minister's son here, it just reminds me of my change of heart that I had to have. And I think the word that jumped out was rebellious, that I just resisted this idea that I needed to grow my spiritual connection. I taught yoga, I did Reiki, I know all about your chakras, I could give you a great massage and light some candles, but that idea, that my conception was so great, kept me disobedient and defiant and resistant to actually growing a different conception of a power that was going to save me. And for years, I definitely struggled in step one. I struggled and struggled and struggled. And I completely identify with the fact that it was just, I just needed to get the right food plan. I just needed to get all the right Tupperware and containers and be able to manage and control. And that's just me trying to control the show. But I'm so grateful today that God is the primary thing in my life that keeps me sane and happy. And if I really trust God, I don't have a care in the world. I'm just so, so powerless every day over my life. And so I literally, the first thing I do when I wake up in the morning to this day as a recovered woman, I just say step one, that we admitted we were powerless. And that first word, it's, I'm not doing this alone. You guys are with me. And I just have to share, I am invited to go to my very first live face-to-face meeting here in Colorado today. I'm so excited to see some of my fellows. Granted, I'm going to sit 6 feet apart from them, but that's okay. I'm not being rebellious anymore. I'm showing up. I'm doing my part. And thank God for the big book, and thank God for God. Mm-hmm. And with that, I pass.
Oh, thank you, Carrie G. That's exciting. Renee W., followed by Kathleen W.
This is Renee M. from Pennsylvania.
Oh.
Can I be heard?
Yeah. What is your last initial, Renee?
M.
M. Okay. Sorry, I got it wrong. And you're in
no
Pennsylvania.
Problem.
Thank you. Okay.
Yes, thanks for your service. Glad to be here, everyone, with you this morning. I absolutely had some upbringing in a church and had a knowledge, just a belief too, that there was a God. Yet when what really happened, I had an amazing life-changing experience with God. Yet what I lived out for about 2 years after that was not, there's no God. It was, I know better. I know better how to manage food, lose weight. And frankly, I had lost over 100 pounds multiple times. And so I was convinced that I knew better. It wasn't until I knew my own spiritual experience. It wasn't until I really had, I tell people, I lost the ability to diet. And that was the beginning of the end. The night is darkest before the dawn. And that was absolutely what I needed. And that just really is reflective of where my mind and my heart was at the time. What really brought me to my knees was the inability to diet, which was absolutely evident to the outside for other people to see my greatest fear. I'm not enough. I'm unhealthy. And so that really brought me to a place where I was able to acknowledge that I didn't know better than God. And not just with the food that brought me in, but I just knew from my experiences, I needed to work the steps. I needed to clean house. And so what a life-changing experience that was for me. I also love how he's in this hospital and he's approached by an alcoholic who had a known spiritual experience. So it was out there. And that's really what I think is one of our greatest assets is I don't have to worry about my delivery per se. I have a known spiritual experience that has set me free from the mental obsession with food and in other things in my life. And that's all I need. I need to have that and be able to share that. And I can't get that wrong. When the Lord gives me an opportunity to share that, I'm just a vessel. And so I can so appreciate everything that I've been hearing. And it's just good for me to remember that I still, till this day, 14 years later, in a healthy body, doesn't matter that I'm in a healthy body, I still don't know better than God. And frankly, than others sometimes, you know, I don't know better. And so I have a choice to make multiple times every day if I'm going to surrender my will and my life to the care of God. And so I need all of you. Thank you. I'll wrap up. I need all of you to continue on this journey. So I'm glad to be here. Thanks. I pass.
Thank you. Thank you. And Renee M., you will be our last share for today. I'm sorry, Kathleen W., we ran out of time. All right, so I want to thank all those who shared this morning, all of you who are on the line. And We are now going to close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer, and I will ask Kara L. to read a vision for you.
Good morning. This is Kara L., recovered compulsive overeater from California. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you. Until then.